Mini-episode 1888 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You'll want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1888. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu. That almost always means either one thing or another. We're either talking basketball, as Ben is our FDH chief hoops analyst, or we've been running a mini series since, I think, 2020 on the show here, analyzing developments in the streaming industry. And today it is the latter. It is the Netflix acquisition of Warner Brothers. Ben very presciently reached out to me a couple days ago and said, hey, we got to record on this. And I said, great idea, as I always do. And this is a huge, huge, huge domino that's falling. You and I have traced out the industry. It really sort of burgeoned, I would say, at the early end of the pandemic here, as far as all the different services that came into being. And it sort of reached a peak amount with the services. And now we're into kind of the receding phase. We've got Hulu, which is going to be folded into Disney Plus, which I think you and I have said for a number of years makes the most sense. You don't want to have, you know, too many streaming services under your banner here. You have to have something that people know to go to. And now this is going to be the biggest subsuming yet if the merger happens. And we'll talk about that part of it also, too. HBO Max, the newly branded HBO Max, previously Max, previously HBO Max before that, to subsume that into Netflix. This is maybe the biggest development yet, Ben Chu. This one is absolutely monumental in an era where monumental streaming developments are happening all the time. But I can't see one that's bigger than this one.
I mean, it's essentially effectively a merger of the top streaming service. And I believe at this time, either the third or fourth.
Yes, third.
Streaming service online right now.
And Prime's in between, but yes, I think HBO Max.
When this discussion was coming out, when David Zaslav was trying to roll down the Warner Brothers and to do the eventual splitting of the narrative, they kind of thought that this was going to happen. I think the bigger surprise here is that Netflix is the one subsuming it and not Paramount, of all places, because we all assumed that Paramount would just go in and, you know, there was already an existing somewhat, you know, friendly relationship with David Zaslav and the head of Paramount at the time, essentially, you know, Ellison's son. But it looks like Ted Sarandos's friendship with David Zaslav is going to win out here at this point, barring any sort of regulatory things. But it's really interesting only because Netflix so far, and we've seen this, like, they have been very sort of hesitant about all their acquisitions. They've always been like, we're not going to do a full sports season. We're going to do an event. We don't want to acquire that many baseball games. We just want the Home Run Derby and a select game so that we can get people to our service. So it's very interesting how this is going to sort of break down, because we still don't know, outside of like the high amount of money that this merger is going to take, we still don't know half of what's going to be going on to how HBO Max will be subsumed within Netflix and all these other little machinations that come from this.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack from what you just said there, among other things. I've been saying as far back, I know, as 2020, when some of these other services were coming into being, right around that period of time, give or take, when you had Peacock being launched by NBC Universal, when you had Paramount Plus becoming the newest manifestation of, I think, what had been CBS All Access previously, but that was a decidedly minor league app at the time. Paramount Plus was more of a step into the big time. Subsequently, when you had Disney Plus coming into being, I was looking at this, and I've said for years now, so I'm going to start on this point. I said as far back as then, like, Netflix feels like they're fighting with one arm tied behind their back because all these other places are tied to a content factory. It's either repurposing of television shows, many of which are popular, or studios or whatever. But like, I'm looking at it like, and that was about at the time, I think, that Tiger King blew up big. And I was like, okay, but like, how many times can you do that? How many times can you go out and buy something that ends up blowing up and like, hey, we're the best? It was an ad hoc model that really the rest of the world didn't look at it that way. But I kind of did. I was kind of like, how long can you make it without any kind of internal content factory? And boy, oh boy, oh boy, did they go out and get a gigantic one right here. I'll never be able to say that about them ever again, because the concern that I had for them as far as sustainability, they erased that in one fell swoop here, Ben.
Well, I mean, I think you're underplaying it a little bit, Rick, here.
Really? Okay.
Like, after they had a lot of hits, I mean, starting with Baptist of Cards to begin with, and then Black Mirror and everything else down the line.
Sure.
The game and all that too. But it's a very unique proposition because the only player previously in this whole thing, Amazon, acquired MGM. So that was a big move for them at the time. And again, one of the big questions that I think Netflix and Ted Sarandos had to be asking themselves is they really needed some IP at some point. Like, they are now in sort of their phase. Like, they still have very popular shows, but a lot of them are coming to the end of their time. And because of that, they need a content replenishment or content refueling, essentially. And getting, essentially, you know, Warner Brothers at this time, which has so many things already under its belt, including like DC Comics. You also have the whole HBO lineup that will be coming forward from that too. And then on top of that, you also have to look at stuff like Harry Potter and a lot of the IP that's just within Warner Brothers right now. And what we've seen, at least in the last year or two, Netflix has been busy acquiring known commodities, because I think as we see the streaming services price go up, you really have to ascertain and say, look, we need to keep people on our scenario here on Netflix Island. And if you don't have that level of content, people now have choice. And it's not really surprising that this deal is going its way, but it strikes me that this is Netflix's really first big swing of this sort of timeline.
Yeah. And like I said, it couldn't be any bigger than this. I mean, if you're going to make a move, this is a huge one. And like you said before, to tie into another one of your points, when you're talking about that they weren't looking for too many live sports rights, like, we'll take this, but not this. Well, if they'd included TNT Sports in this, that would have been ironically more baseball. It would have included the baseball postseason parts of it. It would have included Game of the Week on Tuesday nights, etc. But the linear cable networks are not a part of the deal. They would have been if it was a part of Paramount. So this is a thing where, again, much like Versant with NBC Universal, where like they just put them on an ice floe, presumably that's where we're headed right now. They're calling it Discovery Global. These networks will be off on their own, and it'll be one of those type of deals here too. By the way, I think in both cases, if I understand this correctly, and these are complicated, you know, machinations here, but I think it is the linear cable networks that are getting saddled with a lot of the debt in the process, as the more valued part is what's acquired. So in looking at this, there was an excellent analysis this weekend on Awful Announcing when they were talking about the future of TNT Sports and really the unsustainability of it going forward as an independent. Because right now, again, whoever they're owned by, I mean, it's going to be a poverty deal like Versant, essentially, if they're just off and owned by themselves. So good luck affording a re-up of, I think they have the French Open for a number of years, but as far as the baseball rights, as far as the hockey rights that include, by the way, the Stanley Cup final, as far as, again, some of the Big 12 football and basketball rights, I don't know exactly how long those go, and those don't cost as much as some of these other things here, but those cannot be afforded if they stay as an independent. So Awful Announcing was kind of gaming it out here that Paramount, may be interested in acquiring these bits. They wanted the whole thing, but as far as to be able to pull in some, at least, of the Discovery Global elements, I don't think you could rule that out at this point, once Paramount, of course, admits defeat in this whole thing as far as acquiring the whole thing, and I think we're a ways off from that. Peacock, it won't be happening as far as NBC Universal. They don't have an interest in this. But again, by dint of the fact that they just, like I said, put Versant out on a nice flow. They're not going to replace them with a bunch of other networks.
They were in the bidding pool, Rick, but they did not put together an offer that was deemed as.
Yeah, they don't have the money for it. I mean, if they had the money for it, they'd be hanging on to what is now the Versant channels and everything. The other thing that was in the awful announcing column here, potentially, keep an eye on this with Fox, particularly with the Fox One launch of the streaming service here, that those extra sports rights, again, is there anything here that TNT has that you would consider to be a real world-defining kind of a package? Nah, not since they lost the NBA, but they're not insignificant either. So it is something where, again, TNT Sports will not last as an independent too many years down the road, because they won't have the money to keep the existing sports rights that they have. They will either be subsumed into another entity, or they will cease to operate at some point, as Awful Announcing pointed out.
And also, I will note this too, Front Office Sports also put out a report that, at least in the temporary, they will be not rebranding, but essentially, if this deal is completed, that they would, TNT Sports would be creating its own sort of separate app in the interim.
Okay.
And then we will see what happens, because it's going to be really interesting, because you're going to have to discuss how much that's going to be, like how much money you're really truly going to spend, because the NBA, at least at the time for TNT, was their big get. And while baseball and hockey, we know, is hitting a upward trajectory at the current moment, I don't know how many viewers are going to be excited to pay like $19.99 or $24.99 for essentially half rights in most cases.
Well, again, the fun thing about when we do a segment like this, which has gone back to 2020. I think this was something that we conceived during lockdown, when the streaming business really started to reach, I don't know if you'd call it full maturity but certainly full maturity as far as the content that's out there, not in a business sense, because we're probably, still a number of years away from it reaching maturity in a financial and sustainable sense, as these mergers keep demonstrating to us. But one of the things that I talked about at the time, this was in 2022, this was when the Warner Media Discovery, when that whole merger ended up happening in the first place. I remember talking about this with you, that I was on a long road trip with my dad when he still had Sirius XM. And we're listening to David Faber was interviewing Mr. Malone from Discovery, John Malone, about the whole thing here. And I came back on the show, and I kind of, David Faber, again, very accomplished media guy, whatever. I'm not taking anything away from him, but I did kind of goof on him a bit of like, how do you interview John Malone for like 45 minutes and never get into, well, now you're going to have HBO Max and Discovery Plus. What are you going to do with those? Like, maybe I got streaming on the brain. People have maybe accused me and you of that, but like, guys like me and you are like, we want to know. And the answer to that was, we're just going to have both of them. So that's what makes me laugh when you talk about the TNT Sports app. Hello, if it's going to be the Discovery Networks, the TNT Sports is under, you have, say it with me, kids, Discovery Plus. So yes. What do you need another app for? This drives me crazy, Ben. What do you need the duplication of effort for, you know?
It's probably going to be really interesting if this deal goes through, how all that unwinds, because I think we both know that while that part of Warner Brothers will still exist, those are very sort of, I wouldn't say unappealing, because linear cable networks still do matter on some level. But I do have to say, like, it's not an attractive package for a lot of people. And I thought this was, the whole initial split was, the plan was to sell off one of this sections to another entity. And then this was going to be the thing we're at least going to keep on in the interim or eventually wind that down over time while when other people and other acquisitions will occur. And ultimately, at the end of the day, really, if we're being totally honest here, is that Warner Brothers is not going to really cease to exist here. It's just more that the streaming service and the back catalog and library of Warner Brothers and HBO is going to be heading to either Netflix or Paramount at some point.
Yeah. I agree with that because I think that, again, it's in Netflix's best interest to keep the brand alive. It's going to be a very strong sub-brand. And that's something where, again, any original Netflix content, to put it under the Warner Brothers banner, that is decades and decades and decades of credibility right there, if nothing else. So that's something where I agree with you. It will continue to exist. But again, questions as to whether the merger will actually happen. Will Paramount get back in the game? And it seems to center around two different questions right now. One are the regulatory and antitrust implications of this. And the second one in looking at this is, of course, the fact that Paramount wanted this. Paramount Sundance wanted this very, very badly. They wanted to be the ones to subsume and the entire Warner Media pie. And they didn't get that. And by some indications, they may have had the best overall price. They kind of made it clear that like money was going to be no object. Supposedly, they had some sovereign wealth funds behind them, whether it be Saudi Arabia or anybody else. And if you have that happening, then you do have a good chance of blowing everybody else out of the water. But what that all ties to is, of course, again, Paramount under the Ellison family, very, very close to this White House, which presumably wants Paramount to have this. So that is something where, as we have seen in the year 2025, that kind of matters. So whether it be the regulators on their own throwing spokes into the wheels here of like, hey, man, I'm not so sure this is going to work out, you know, from a regulatory perspective, antitrust. Certainly a lot of folks in Hollywood would like for that to be the case because Hollywood is very, very, very nervous about the number of studios and entities and like this being cut down by one and a big one at that. And then there's also the White House if they decide to get involved in this and if they have the stroke to do anything about it, which is sort of becoming an increasing kind of a question as far as what the limits of their power might be. So there's plenty of reason to think that this may not happen. You and I are talking about this as though it's going to. I think just about every time we've had one of these big things in the last couple of years, it has happened. I struggle to think of any media type thing where it got this far along, announcement was made, they get this far, and at the end of the day, it doesn't happen. So it's happening until it doesn't. I think that has to be the presumption. But there's no, but again, everything I just cited, separate or collectively, could be reasons to ensure that it doesn't happen.
Right, and I think the real question ultimately is going to be here is how the antitrust and just the ability of Netflix to potentially sway this is going to be the real question here. Because we've seen, at least in recent history, that as long as all the coffers are usually filled properly, stuff tends to happen.
Yep.
And it's going to really come down to David Ellison, Paramount, Skydance, and how much they really want. Is there a way that I ultimately think it's based off of the, I know CNBC did a report on this, based on the poison pill that was placed in that agreement. I would logistically think that the deal's probably going to get done because you do not put a poison pill in a contract if you don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
So it feels like to me at that point is that I think probably Paramount, Skydance, Netflix, and Warner Brothers, if you're asking what the most likely thing will happen, there'll be some agreement between the three to where essentially Netflix will subsume all of the existing Warner Brothers stuff, and then Paramount will receive a specific, whether it's rights or any other ownership or anything. Because we've seen this in the past, too, in terms of some of the smaller deals that HBO Max and Netflix and even Amazon Prime have made with smaller distributors to have their content on their platform. So it would not shock me if there's some sort of weird three-way agreement that can come to the table and everyone essentially becomes happy in that scenario.
That'll be hilarious because as I referenced before about the NBA leaving Warner Media, leaving TNT Sports because David Zaslav didn't prioritize that. Like, if the shoe ends up being on the other foot here and he ends up saying to Paramount, how does it taste to have this happen, huh? Here's your equivalent of Big 12 basketball and Big 12 football. That'll be pretty funny, Ben.
And I mean, one big thing, too, I think we also have to add on here is that, well, let's not forget Netflix is one of the most highly powerful financial companies in the United States at this period of time.
Yep.
So this is not a slouch. This is not a company where they have to shake down many trees at this period of time. But I think there's a way that I think they're just going to, and we've known this with David Zaslav too, at least based off of the reporting that's been done by a lot of these great organizations like the Hollywood Reporter and Variety. He will, if he believes that he can get this done, even if it has to go to court, he will do it to get it done. This
period. Yep. Yeah.
And again, it's really, I think that's the Netflix thing part is the most shocking part, because I think we all readily assumed that Paramount was probably going to win. But I think this is a way almost for David Zaslav and Warner Brothers to kind of save face a little bit, to where their entity is going to go to Netflix, but they're still going to have some control over these cable networks and some of these other, and TNT Sports, in comparison to when Paramount's deal is to buy the whole thing. So.
Yep. That's true. And so seeing how that ends up playing out is going to be key. When I talked before about regulatory and antitrust implications of the deal, I want to mention something here. And this is something where I don't think you and I have really talked about this on air or off as far as with Netflix here. So I'll be interested to get your thoughts on this as I spring this on you. But there was a good Substack article that I read the other day. It's called The Big Newsletter by Matt Stoller, and it referred back to one from 2019 that I went back and read. I want to recommend this to people. July 9th, 2019, the title of the column is The Slow Death of Hollywood. And specifically what it's talking about in there is how Netflix, and Stoller wasn't even at that time, I think, necessarily even anticipating the degree to which Netflix might be able to pose a threat to movie theaters, because this was pre-pandemic, but where he was talking about what he was referring to as predatory pricing, as far as their willingness to take a loss on things because they were convincing Wall Street that, like, look, down the road, we're going to be a monster. We have the ability to take a loss on these things right now. The whole thing he was talking about in there too, this entire dynamic of that they preferred to go only two seasons on any kind of shows, even if they turn out to be any type of favorites. These shows tend to get more expensive after two seasons. So he's talking about a number of things in this column that sort of anticipated where we are today when you factor in the movie theater part of this. And that part is something that a lot of analysts are looking at with a lot of alarm. And I think a lot of folks in Hollywood also too, because I think Hollywood looks at the movie theater model of distribution. Unsurprisingly, they look at it as a safe and stable kind of way of doing business, pandemics notwithstanding and people not going to them. But hopefully we don't get into another situation like that anytime soon. And that, again, Netflix can really get a sort of monopolistic degree of control as far as distribution, particularly if they can drive enough of these movie theaters, some of which are very marginal at this point as far as their ability to hang on. So as far as the business side of this, in terms of Netflix in the entertainment industry, and I think particularly with the movie theaters, it's a very, very interesting angle to all of this. It's not part of the core thing of streaming that you and I generally talk about in these series, but there are so many things that affect aspects of the entertainment industry outside of that. And whether this deal happens or not may very well determine whether we continue to have movie theaters, at least on the scale that we do, 5-10 years down the road.
Right. And I think one of the big things that, especially because there's been multiple articles about the CNBC had a great one. I saw the Hollywood Reporter also had a very good one, to where we, unless Netflix dramatically changes their model, which outside of their recent showing of the K-pop Demon Hunters to select theaters and that sort of block time, Netflix has really sort of eschewed theater releases. Or if they are doing releases, it's mainly for a brief period of time of like 14 days or less. So so that breaks the older model of like you have a movie that usually plays for about a month or two, and then you cycle through again unless it becomes very popular. So I can understand Hollywood is concerned, at least for now, based off of the statement that Netflix has put out, that they are going to let Warner Brothers still handle that in a way. Like, they didn't say anything directly, but they're going to say, look, for now, that will be fine. But it is a very interesting market and potentially could be one of the reasons why the deal might not work. If Hollywood wants to throw some money back into the ring in terms of the government, it's going to be very interesting to see. I don't think it impacts this deal as much as people think, because I don't think that model is going to get dramatically changed. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be really interesting to tell how the movie industry is going to handle this. Because, again, with stuff like, you know, Harry Potter, with stuff like DC Comics, like stuff that tends to get very high profile, long theatrical releases, it may change in that period of time. And we'll see what happens, though. But again, Hollywood tends to be worried about these things, but they usually never come to anything insane at a period of time. But it is, for the theater owners, I can totally understand why they are worried at this time.
Yeah. Well, two things about what you just said there. One is, and I just Googled this because I thought I remembered something. I Googled the term Netflix pop-up theater, and indeed it came back. Netflix House, that they were doing a thing where they were doing short-term theaters at different places to show releases for this. So you could be looking at something like that on a bigger model, potentially going forward, which would be another way of going at the movie theaters in a way that certainly they would take as an attack, and justifiably so. And the other part of it is as well, going back to what you said before about that there's a certain amount, and I'd say an overwhelming amount in any of these type of deals in the system that we live in, of he who has the gold makes the rules. So where do the real power players in America come down on this one here? And this is one where this deal, again, and I kind of share your perspective on this. I think somehow, some way, at the end of the day, this gets done more or less in the form that we're seeing right now, the proposed form, because generally when things get this far along with these type of deals, they do happen. But the way where it wouldn't happen, and I think it would take something like this. I think it would take the ultimate sort of strange bedfellows kind of a thing. Hollywood appears to be very, very, very strongly opposed to this thing. Now, they don't want to see, I think, Warner Media change in any way, shape, or form. They want to keep them independent. I hate to tell them that ain't happening. But, like, they're here kind of hating on the deal that's getting done. They'd be hating on the Paramount deal, too, if that happened. But, like, they're hating on this deal. And we talked about this before, the Ellisons and the White House, that if the White House decides that they want, you know, the Ellisons to get this badly enough, they could end up doing it. And Hollywood, to circle back to them, there have been a number of articles recently about the major powers in Hollywood lining up behind Gavin Newsom for 2028. So what could sink this thing is if you had the ultimate strange bedfellows of, for completely different reasons, Newsom and Trump both coming out against the deal and all the forces behind them coming out against the deal, that might sink this thing. But me thinks it's going to take something on that scale to sink it.
Right. And I think one of the side things that we need to know too, Rick, is that Netflix over the last 2 years has really pushed sort of their branding and their marketing. I know you mentioned Netflix Films was a big one. They now have branded experiential locations now called Netflix House as well. Those are growing. They have two now, and they're going to have a third in Vegas at some point. And it's going to be very interesting because prior to this, Netflix hasn't really been involved with a lot of government regulatory things at this period of time. So it's going to be interesting to see where they yield the power at this period of time with sort of these scenarios. The tough part is that if you're just looking at it on a, you know, just a normal measure, it's really hard to define what Netflix is at a period.
Yeah.
Of time, because we've never had any sort of narrative to define it, because one of the articles that I read that you brought up a very good point is that one of the things that Netflix is just going to essentially say is like, look, guys, we have other, like, because one of the big discussion points is like, is this a could this turn into a monopoly on some level?
Mm-hmm.
And then what they're going to do is they're going to point to two things. They're going to point to Amazon Prime Video and YouTube. And since there's no, excuse me, Rick, there's no like defined scenario about what Netflix really is on a governmental level, there just isn't enough information at this time to that, though there is a way for Netflix to twist this in a way that doesn't make this deal look as bad as some people would say it is.
Right. And when you look at the history of the regulatory structure on any of these issues, this is something that, again, I've been reading about in recent days here, that it used to be the model of where TV networks could not own their own production companies or own and utilize them. That's why you had a lot of companies selling to different networks. And that's one of the things where, and I think if I read it correctly, I think it was the Nixon White House in 1970. I think it was the FCC that ended up doing it, which, by the way, is hilarious if true, because it led the way for a lot of the Norman Lear type shows in the 1970s to really kind of break out on CBS, many of which had a very anti-Nixon point of view. So funny how that ends up working out. But that used to be kind of the model in this country, and that there used to be these firewalls that would exist, or I think also to a certain extent between TV networks and studios as well. So what you're looking at here now is, again, with Netflix, you're looking at everything under one roof. When you're talking about what are they, they're basically everything here at this point, if they can bring in Warner Brothers, because they've got, again, for what it's worth, you've got HBO, which is, you know, if you're going to have a channel out there, that's a very substantial one. It's got a very substantial library behind it. You've got everything on the HBO Max app, which is inclusive of an awful lot over a period of time. And then the whole Warner Brothers studio, everything that goes with that, and you subsume it into what Netflix already has. What are they? They're basically everything. They're a one-stop shop. And like I said earlier in the show here, when I've been saying since 2020, like, when are they going to get something that's going to feed their stuff in-house to where they're going to have an acquisition unit that's going to be on a permanent basis as opposed to ad hoc? Now they're going to have everything, Ben. Netflix is going to be everything if this happens.
And I mean, the big thing, and we know in how the streaming services changed over the last couple of years, IP is still the big thing.
Yep.
Netflix for a long time was more focused on creating their own IP with stuff like Bridgerton, Stranger Things, House of Cards. So that's what they used, and you know, stuff like Wednesday, and then acquiring stuff like Squid Game. Like, that's what they were doing. But this now feels like this is sort of their sort of moonshot play to kind of become this huge entity. Because the big thing that I would see is, like, if you were to either go on social media or Reddit or any of these other forums, one of the big complaint is, well, there's nothing to watch on Netflix. And if there is a way, you're acquiring well-known properties already, and you can subsume it and put it on your own service, which we will assume for now will be the case. It seems kind of bizarre that they would pay over $70 billion and not find a way to put it on their app. But again, we cannot rule out a scenario where HBO Max runs on its own as a bundle partnership or whatever that will look like. But to me, it's their first really big play, Rick. Like, they've essentially waded around in the kiddie pool for a while now. Right. Or essentially, I'll use the whole analogy, they're essentially a big fish in a small pond. And now it feels like they've bought adjacent pond acres. So it's going to be a really interesting scenario, and it's going to be potentially even great for HBO too, because Netflix is already, in my opinion, when you say the word streaming television, it's the first thing you think of.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a lot of those premier shows that have come through the door recently on that platform is big, and it's going to help them pursue potentially other deals down the line to acquire more interesting talent, because now you can say, hey, we have the backing of Netflix as well now, so we can kind of see what there's. And a big thing for Netflix too, and this was brought up in many of the articles you probably read as well, is like them acquiring these studios, because they, again, prior to this, they only had a handful of shooting areas essentially. So
mm-hmm.
I personally think this kind of fixes a handful of the problems that they have currently.
I absolutely believe that's the case. And it's funny because I talked about this before, that Hulu is in the process of being subsumed into Disney Plus. And so you and I have talked about this over a period of time, that I've been sort of, I guess, a little bit of a hipster or outlier in the whole thing of, like, I've always put HBO Max and Hulu above Netflix, just because of the back libraries that they've had, all the different things that they've had. But now it's going to be essentially Netflix and Disney Plus as, like, the two biggest things out there. I mean, Amazon Prime is kind of its own thing here. But as far as most people from here on in, what are your favorite streaming services? They're probably going to say Netflix and Disney Plus. And now I won't be as much of a hipster, because the things that I love will be subsumed into those two entities. One of the things that's made HBO Max unique and interesting when we're talking about IP, when we're talking about libraries here, I just looked this up to see what's going to become of it. Turner Classic Movies, a very underrated part of HBO Max. Apparently that's going with the Discovery Global. So that's going to be part of the cable networks that are getting sent out on the ice floe here, as it were. There's going to be some kind of residual relationship, but I think it might just be the short-term association with HBO Max ongoing from there. That's where it gets a lot more difficult, I think, if Netflix is going to lose this large classic library. And by the way, and as I have read just now, TCM is going to be part of a group of stations that are going to be burdened by the debt part of this thing, much like Versant is here. So if you're a fan of the classic content that's on TCM, I don't know that you're going to be a winner coming out of this. I don't think TCM is going to be a winner, and I don't think Netflix is going to be a winner as far as that goes. I wonder what it would have taken to have gotten that to be part of the Warner Brothers side of things going forward.
I mean, it's going to be there again. This is still at least 12 to 18 months away from a deal being solidified for sure.
Yep.
So there's still a lot that could change in this moment too. And although, like, this is the plan, it would not shock me that maybe Netflix tries to take some of these entities in transit as well, or maybe potentially Paramount will gain some of these entities in the future. So it's very interesting, because I don't think anybody, when Warner Brothers and David Zaslav were discussing a potential acquisition at some point or being acquired by somebody, I think we all just assumed that was a done deal for Paramount. And yep, that was going to be the big winner here. And now if this deal goes through, then that one of the most powerful streaming services right now is going to get a back catalog in most cases of shows and potential shows that could fill out their roster.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fascinating in that regard. Because again, we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen anything like the jockeying we've seen between the companies thus far in recent days here, you know, with the stakes that are involved. My guess is, and this goes back to what you said before, and, you know, and again, me making the joke about the shoe being on the other foot with Zaslav, of where, you know, his side has to throw some crumbs to the other side. My guess is that Paramount and the Ellisons, if they lose on this, they may decide that half a loaf is better than none, and they may end up, because again, the sports rights are not insubstantial here. I mean, the sports rights.
And to be fair, sports makes a lot of sense for Paramount.
It does.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. And even if it's a thing where, again, if you want to move some of these things onto, look, the UFC is moving completely onto the Paramount Plus paywall. Who's to say that they couldn't figure that the NHL would help in a similar kind of a way? Or some of the baseball stuff as well. So don't rule out that being the case. Right now, everybody's too proud to take an L on this thing in any way, shape, or form. But that's where Zaslav was when he, quote unquote, didn't want to let go of the NBA. He found a way to do that, take a few crumbs being thrown his way. The shoe may be on the other foot, and it may be the Ellisons accepting a few crumbs to walk away from this thing while still solidifying their own content library.
Right. And especially in this timeline with Paramount. They really, we're both going to cough at the same time.
That's right. I had the luxury of the mute button.
It would not shock me that Paramount at this time too is, look, they wanted the whole kin caboodle. They're probably not going to get the kin caboodle at this point. It may be a better rule for them is to start acquiring a lot of these sports rights and then you know, Turner Classic Movies and some of the other, you know, Discovery Plus model type content that could help fulfill their library.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. Paramount Plus, they would seem to be an excellent home for a lot of the TCM content there. So as far as what ends up happening, because I think this is a situation where when you look at what's left of, you know, what's going to now be, you know, Discovery Global with these channels and everything that they have, I think it's going to be worth a lot more than what was out there for Versant. I really believe so. Now, again, much like with that, I'm sort of nonplussed that NBC ended up including, I'm going to say CNBC as part of this thing here. You'd think that having a financial news thing, especially one that's directly branded after you, would be something you'd want to keep. But as far as everything else that's out there, there's not really anything that they're losing that is of any value, I don't think. I mean, you could say potentially on the USA Network SmackDown, but the ratings for that have been going down this year. You could say potentially the Golf Channel, but like what happens between the Golf Channel and NBC Sports in the years to come is going to be absolutely, absolutely fascinating to watch, because there's been such integration of them over a period of time. So, but Versant, for the most part, they don't have anything where I think like the folks at NBC Universal are like, you know, crying hysterically over losing it. And I'm not saying that anybody at Warner Brothers is crying hysterically over losing what's going to be on Discovery Global, because it was their idea to do it this way, Zasloff and Malone and everybody else. But when you look at the entities that are left, whether it be everything that's under the banner of TNT Sports, whether it be Turner Classic Movies, whether it be some of these other things, even the Discovery channels, the whole family of channels that became part of this a couple of years ago. I mean, look, there's a lot of garbage shows on there, brainless shows, but like they draw good numbers.
Right.
I mean, people love watching, you know, Fat Hoarders and everything else like that. So it's like there's a lot more monetizable property in what they're throwing away than what NBC Universal did previously. And that's what leads you to think that there may be a buyer or potentially buyers for the content. When I said before about, you know, TNT Sports potentially going to Fox for Fox One, I don't see Fox necessarily, especially after getting out of the business of 20th Century Fox, I don't see them wanting to get back into that with Turner Classic Movies again. So it could be something where we get into a garage sale type of deal down the road. Oh, I'll take this. Somebody else walks up, I'll take this. You could see it getting split into like two or three significant pieces maybe.
Right, and I think we're also, depending on the, you know, if this deal even passes regulators, we're going to see a shift no matter what, because yep. This is the cat's out of the bag, Rick. It's not getting put back in. So
right.
Whether it's maybe in, and another thing I do think I should note, and it does make sense to discuss, is that there is a scenario where the deal doesn't go through as currently planned, but Netflix will still acquire something from Warner Brothers.
Sure.
At the end of the day, that will still be valuable to Netflix.
That part's interesting too. Yeah. I mean, if it becomes the King Solomon deal where Netflix has to swallow something they don't want, and it becomes the same thing on the other side of the equation for Paramount, that would be really interesting, because it's my sense is that the studio is what both entities would probably most be after. And that's what would make it hard for this to happen. Do you have the same sense that it's the studio that's probably the number one piece that is being jockeyed for?
Off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, HBO is a big brand, but both of these entities could use Warner Bros. Studios. Let's just be totally honest.
Yes. So, whichever way that ends up going, like you said, it's a thing where it's going to take, you know, a year, 18 months, whatever. It's probably going to be until the spring to where we have any kind of really solid idea on what's going to happen here. Again, you and I are looking at this like the way that these deals tend to go, for lack of a better way of putting it, possession is 9/10 of the law. You get out there, you say you're going to be doing this, you have everything in place. These things tend to go forward way more often than not. But as far as whether this time will be the exception to the rule, if there will be enough powerful forces that are able to congeal on this one to shoot it down, which, like I said, I think that's the only way this thing doesn't happen. One way or another, we'll probably have an idea of the direction of things by the spring. But you're looking at another year before everything can really be kind of unwound and everything. And that's where, again, because there have been a lot of people looking at this like, OMG, how's this going to affect Tony Khan and AEW? Like, look, it's going to be 2027 before there's any kind of unwinding between them. And from what I'm seeing, it's not going to be on day one of any kind of separation that everything on Discovery Global is off of HBO Max. So you're looking at a circumstance where it's probably going to be status quo for a lot of things into 2027. What then becomes the thing for AEW is what happens with the next contract. And if you go back to 2001, it was the AOL Time Warner merger that was one of the things that really kind of doomed WCW, because Ted Turner wasn't going to let anything happen to WCW as long as he had any control. He lost control in that merger. So what happened before could happen again. As a big AEW fan, I am sick at the prospect of that. But finding your next deal out there at a time where the WWE has established tentacles with so many different entities. Oh, by the way, Paramount Plus too, because even though they don't have anything on there, UFC does. And UFC is now part of their parent company, TKO. So this is where you could be looking at AEW possibly going to Amazon Prime or something like that, just to have some type of major presence out there. But there's a lot of ramifications that are going to take a long time to play out. I will say again, you know, in the very, very large wrestling subculture on the internet this week, that was a big thing right there. Like, OMG, what happens to AEW? We won't know for some period of time, because it depends on whether this deal goes forward in its present more or less form or not. And then what happens from there if it does? And then if it doesn't, if it ends up getting subsumed into Paramount Plus, that's a completely different set of realities after that. So long way to go on this one, but I know you and I wanted to get in on this at the very beginning and just kind of call our shots on some of the things that might happen and give our analysis at this point.
And I think this is also, and this is potentially why Netflix went through that huge UI change, a way of potentially adding HBO to a very simple look now.
Yeah.
And we start to see now, especially with Disney Plus and assuming Hulu, they have that sort of tab method.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix recently redid there. So if they decide that they need to integrate onto their official app and UI, they can do it. It's not going to take them any ability or strategy. So
yeah. And it is funny that I noticed the other day on HBO Max, when I was on there, and this is, I mean, just a coincidence in terms of timing, but it was the first time that I had seen pop up near the top here. So I'm guessing that this just happened as far as acquiring the rights. It was showing Mad Men being on there. And I'm looking at the interface, and the HBO Max interface it's not completely the same as Netflix, but it's not like it's night and day different either. And I'm looking at it like, this is reminiscent of when I used to see it pop up on Netflix like this. And here we go. Could be coming back to Netflix as a part of this, Ben.
Well, it's just going to, and again, like for people who, and we talk about prestige television a lot now more than ever, because there's very limited aspects on cable networks in terms of prestige television.
Right.
And if Netflix is able to acquire the rights to stuff like The Sopranos, Succession, True Blood, like just a bunch of these very notable HBO shows that's automatically in their back catalog, then that retains viewership, because we know there's like sort of like three groups of people, Rick, when it comes to streaming television. There's the people that just want to watch their content, people who use it as their main content watch. And then there's all the people like, this is what I do for my life. I am a Netflix fanboy at that period of time. So it gives a huge boost, because one of the issues that we saw is that while they have popular shows still, like Squid Game, Wednesday, Stranger Things, there and Bridgerton, they're kind of not in their peak timeline right now in terms of content. And if there's a way to feed into that and use some of that improved AI they've mentioned in the past to get people to stay on Netflix longer, well, that's perfect, because that means you're going to force someone to stay on that platform.
Well, and that's the whole thing too, is that, yeah, like when we're talking about, you know, the IP of a lot of these franchises that are out there, I go back to, so one of the most recent segments we did on this show was with my great friend, the TV reviewer, Kimberly Potts, her great book that she recently did about Sonny, which came out in conjunction with the 20th anniversary. Her previous book, equally great, which I had read, it was about the Brady Bunch, and it was talking about the business model of that, of how in the second life of the show, sort of similar to Star Trek, because it was on the air at about the same time. In fact, there was an overlap there, but then syndication is where it blew up. So her book was about the business model of how this show, it became bigger than ever, like in the late 70s and moving forward, because syndication at the time was the monster. Syndication was just incredible. Streaming has replaced syndication in that way. Streaming, by definition, being on demand, these are things that you can go back to at any point in time. So streaming essentially is syndication, the old model, on steroids. You look at all these shows that blew up during the pandemic. You look at The Office, the way that it blew up, and a lot of folks checked out The Sopranos for the first time, as you mentioned there. So,
and I mean, we would be behooved not to mention The Wire as well.
So. The Wire, yeah. So it's like you have these shows here, and it's one of these things, and it's easy to say, like, okay, well, we've got this, but it's going to, you know, what's that ever going to be worth? You have no way of knowing what's going to happen in the future to make some of these things there, but you know that some of them are going to blow up again. Another thing would be, what was it? Was it White Collar? Was that the show that, or Suits? No, it was Suits. Okay. Suits was the one that blew up from being on Netflix. And yeah, so it's like, if they acquire this ginormous HBO library of these shows here, it's one of these things where it's like, I mean, we can guess that, like, maybe there will be another Sopranos revival down the road or this or that or whatever. But I mean, could just as easily be anything. Could be Barry. If we have another, you know, pandemic or something like that, that was a great short-lived show. I mean, you have no way of knowing what's going to happen at some point, but you know that you have this, for lack of a better term, arsenal of programming that's there. And that's where, again, streaming being syndication on steroids, you have this incredible, incredible arsenal, warehouses and warehouses of shows. And that's where, again, that in and of itself is a very significant part of this deal.
And again, it comes down to it, like, and Netflix knows this as much as anyone, it comes down to watch time.
Yes.
And if you can, and they were essentially, we know this, the pioneers of the automatic episode movie. Essentially, mm-hmm. Watch what's next.
Yeah,
and then essentially that caused the whole narrative, the whole binge model that we all know and love this timeline now.
Yep,
and it has just allowed them to become this huge player. And yep. Now with this, they're missing some of the IP stuff, because again, we note this too for Netflix. One of the sort of the weaknesses that they have. They did some of the Marvel stuff, but not outside of maybe Jessica Jones and Daredevil, nothing really took off for them.
Right.
It kind, but if you're acquiring Batman, Superman, all that sort of IP, and Harry Potter, which I know too is a huge platform for them.
Yep.
And they have a reboot show coming up at one point in the near future. So it does not shock me that these are things that if I was Netflix, I want on my platform.
Right. You absolutely want them on your platform. And having that there is going to be something that just really gives them such a, to even say leg up sounds like, you know, an understatement as far as what this would do. So, I mean, you know, the developments in the streaming industry the last couple of years, I struggle to think of a bigger one than this one, because this is something where, again, whichever way this ends up landing, and we do have an early sense, like we said, of how it likely will based on the way that these things have gone in the past. But again, the stakes being what they are, and that's one of those things where, again, at the end of the day, as we say, he who has the gold makes the rules. So you get enough, you know, very, very, very wealthy power players that come out against this thing, and from different angles here too, Hollywood and then also the Ellison/White House angle. You get a convergence of that, and that might be enough to doom it. But we'll have to see how it plays out. But this feels like the biggest domino thus far in this whole reshaping of the entertainment industry via streaming that we've been tracing for the last 5+ years, almost 6 years, Ben.
Ryan in it. It's just absolutely crazy to think that. We're very close to having some of the biggest and most notable entities in terms of content on Netflix, which is already the number one streaming service in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you give Netflix the things that I've been saying for 5 years. Boy, they could really use these things. Oh, boy. What are they going to be like when they have those things? You know, they've managed to make it this far, just acquiring on more or less an ad hoc kind of a basis. But, yeah, to have something built in like this is just almost unfathomable to think about. Any aspects of this thus far that we failed to get to, Ben?
One thing I do want to note, and I do think this will be very interesting, it seems like, and again, this is going to be some of the discussions during the regulatory process, is will Netflix cozy up to some of these other companies like Google and Amazon to potentially help get this deal done, because they are essentially their chief competitors?
Yes.
And I could totally see a scenario where they broker some sort of an agreement that we're all on the same page here. They can push themselves into this scenario. So it's going to be very interesting to see the response from Amazon, the response from Google and YouTube to how this will essentially, because we haven't really discussed it, and I'll just leave this very briefly, but because we could keep talking for hours about this, but I would say, like, it gets to the point where streaming based on this deal will become a defined industry in the US right now because of this. And it's going to be very interesting to see how we define streaming TV forward.
Yes. And very interesting in terms of what you said there, because as far as Amazon and Google go, Amazon, with having MGM Studios and with them being a significant streamer in their own right, I think they're considered to be the second biggest streamer at this point. Although that one's so hard to tell. They're kind of in their own bucket here, because how many people have it for that versus how many people have it for the free shipping, and that's kind of thrown in. I know, like, my brother's family, they have it for the free shipping, and then, like, if there's anything, oh, this is great, we get to watch this, but, like, they sure as heck don't have it for that. They have it as something that's thrown in. So nevertheless, though, second is second. That's pretty big. Versus Google, I mean, okay, yeah, you know, you've got NFL Sunday Ticket and some of these things like that. They've started to make some kind of, you know, moves into streaming and everything like that, as we would understand it. Obviously, YouTube is, you know, by a lot of measures, the biggest streamer in the world if you're just talking traffic, right, and that
and
kind
I
of stuff.
And I think that's going to, essentially, this is why I would not be surprised Netflix cozies up to both Amazon and Google.
But I think it could be more effective with Google, because here's my thought. Do they have as many areas of overlap? Like, I see Amazon as having...
We know, but it comes down again to watch time.
Watch time, okay.
It is the most notable streaming service at this period of time.
Okay.
But again, it's different from what we think of streaming television.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's still the most popular video websites on the planet Earth. So it's going to be very interesting, because I know it's going to, at some point when it comes down to this regulatory discussion.
Yeah.
Netflix arguing that them subsuming HBO and Warner Brothers is not going to create a monopoly at this time.
Sure. And, like, you know, YouTube, yeah, I guess they have their own way of, like, they're sort of in their own bucket definitionally as far as being a streamer, because so much of it is from content creators like us. There's some bigger ones out there. There's some YouTube originals that are pretty big, but most of it is from, you know, a host of, you know, much smaller organisms than you have on these other platforms where they're dominated by bigger players. But, you know, as far as, like, Google not having any kind of, like, defined super library the way that, like, Amazon does and Netflix does, like, maybe they're less of a natural rival. Like you said, they're going to be a rival for eyeballs, and you can't downplay that. But when you get past the eyeballs of folks watching the streaming, if you can get past that point, is there any other main point of competition there? They may be natural allies here on this potentially.
Yeah. And I, again, like, if we even go back to Amazon, they are, in my opinion, not really a loser in this case, because they've built their model differently from Netflix.
And yeah.
They essentially were the first people to acquire their own studio in MGM.
Yep.
And it's, again, it's going to be very interesting. Like we said, there's going to be a lot of strange bedfellows in this scenario where I don't think we'd ever would have had Netflix and Amazon and Google all teaming up together because it's in their best interest.
Yeah.
That this deal potentially goes through because that will allow them more opportunity to just continue to exist overall. And again, yeah. We all saw this coming, Rick, with the amount of, from the year, I believe it was like, what, it was just Disney Plus came into being around the pandemic timeline.
Yes.
And then we saw the avalanche of different streaming services outside of, we don't even talk about the side ones, stuff like Acorn TV, stuff like Crunchyroll, stuff mm-hmm. like Hallmark Channel Plus.
Right.
So there's, I'm not surprised consolidation is going to start to happen with some of these entities at this period of time.
It was inevitable, and we are seeing it clear.
At some point, and especially how Warner Brothers was really struggling during that period of timeline, especially their shareholders. It's going to be a scenario where a lot of people, at least from the shareholder perspective, will be very happy just based on the deal that was given.
Well, and the one thing that we can say is, I mean, regardless of the final destination here, whether it be Netflix, as now presently seems, or Paramount, I went back to before when I was talking about the WCW angle of this, the AOL Time Warner deal of 2001. For the entirety of the 21st century, there has been instability with the classic Warner Brothers / TBS / whatever franchise here. AT&T, anybody? So you've had every couple of years, it seems like, something significant happening here, some kind of significant change. The one concrete takeaway we can make is that regardless of which of these entities ends up with it, those days are done. Warner Brothers is going to be where it's going to be when it ends up somewhere. I think you would probably agree with that, yes?
Yeah, I completely agree. This is essentially whether it goes to Paramount or whether it goes to Netflix, a huge studio with a lot of IP. And it's going to impact the streaming industry for sure, because essentially you're subsuming at least one of these entities at some point. And
you
it's
are.
Going to be really interesting to see how, if the HBO deal goes through for Netflix, how the price shock is going to get added. We saw that essentially come to fruition for NBC and after acquiring the rights to the NBA and Major League Baseball too, of
yep.
where the sticker shock of that went up significantly. And it's going to be really interesting too. Is Paramount going to have, let's say hypothetically too, Rick, let's say Paramount doesn't get much out of this deal, essentially outside of maybe some stuff. They might have to start their own acquisition talks going to maybe an NBC or maybe potentially looking down the line at other options just to exist, because right now their streaming service, at least in my opinion, is not perceived as a notable service at all.
Right, right. And
unless you have a very specific niche that you need, essentially, whether it's the NFL, UFC, or you know, some stuff like Yellowstone and all the spinoff stuff from that as well. So.
Well, keep in mind, it's only the Yellowstone spinoffs that they have because
they,
as we said at the time, like, what are you even doing here? One of the first things they did when they started their thing was to sell off the Yellowstone rights to Peacock, which, again, Taylor Sheridan stuff's going to end up on Peacock in a couple of years anyways, but that's another story for another day. But yeah, no, that's got to be one of the things that's got the Ellisons sweating right about now is that, again, Netflix is only going to really separate themselves here. Amazon's doing really strong with Prime, but like you said, they're kind of playing a different game than anybody else. They're just kind of doing what they're doing.
They figured it out. They went with the, which is kind of funny, they went with the TNT model, which is you build your content library around sports, and then you acquire things that make sense to acquire.
That's right. And you've got Disney Plus, which again, once they subsume Hulu into them, they're going to be just fine. Disney seems like it's doing
and
fine with that.
With ESPN going DTC as well.
Yeah.
Them also getting added into the Disney Plus ecosystem, that they're going to be fine no matter what. This is really going to boil down to Paramount really needing to sort of weather the storm in this period of time.
It is interesting to note with ESPN, and it's been noted here, that even with the TNT sports rights available, ESPN's not going to be, you know, Disney rather, is not going to be, the parent company is not going to be getting involved with trying to get any of these other assets at this point. They don't need them. That's the way that NBC Universal is looking at it. They don't need them. So, again, like I said, probably looking at Paramount and Fox if the deal ends up going through and these elements are available. Does Paramount swallow their pride and do it as far as sucking up TNT Sports and TCM and some of the things? I think they very well could. TCM is something that could give a little bit of a turbo boost anyways to Paramount Plus, give them some more stuff.
And again, I don't want to be down on the service. I'm just going on roughly.
We're being realistic. Yeah, we're being realistic.
Well, I'm also going off of just subscriber data as well, too. So.
Sure. Well,
if you're in fifth or sixth place, that's not a great sign.
No, you're not. And that's the thing here, too, that this deal could put them further behind the eight ball. So that's one of the reasons I think Paramount is coming in so hot and heavy to try to make their own deal instead. So all these different elements to keep track of and much more going forward here. Thank you, Ben Chu, for being part of a great breakdown on the streaming industry here, as we've been doing for the last 5 to 6 years on the show. Much appreciated, as always, my man. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1888.